Thanks for listening to Resume on Podcast One.
I'm Mick Garris. When it comes to horror, you might know me as a writer, producer, and director. But I also love making people open up. I'm getting together with the most fascinating people in fright filmmaking. I'm going to pick their brains and find out what they know. But if they've got any secrets they're determined to keep, I have ways of making them talk.
Download new episodes of Postmortem with Mick Garris every other Wednesday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or you can subscribe on iTunes.
Thank you so much for tuning in. My name's Chris Loxamana, and just a reminder, this is the show where we talk about resumes. That's right, the jobs of just the greatest people. The most very, very interesting people that I'm every single person I've had on the show has been incredible, and today is going to be no different.
No different.
No. We have Jackie Cashin. Did I say that right? Cashin?
Cashin.
Cashin, excuse
like
me.
Like vacation. But you can ethnic it up because it's Armo Marty Day. It's Armenian Martyrs Day, you guys. It's April 24th. The Turks genocided us, and my grandmother was there. She lived.
So now I feel even worse for getting
Oh, no, that's fine. But no, people like to ethnic it up, and you've chosen wisely to ethnic it up. I didn't.
I should, yeah.
Yeah,
should.
My dad, when he, they were like, no, we're Wisconsining it up. We're non-ethnicking it up.
Yeah.
Because
is the Armenian people, do they have a strong presence in Wisconsin?
No. There's a couple thousand, but
really?
Yeah, it's about
that's more than I thought.
Right. It's about as many Muslims as there are Armenians.
Yeah, we have a guy from Wisconsin who works here, and I am the first Asian he's ever met.
Yeah, I have to tell you, when I moved here, I had met many Asian, a lot of Chinese. I went to college with a lot of Chinese people, but they were from the mainland, and so they all had accents. And so when I moved to California. I'm not the hero of this fucking story. But, ooh,
language? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I had not met or known for a long time an Asian person who was an American, who had no accent.
Mm.
So, hey, Grandma, what the fuck? Because,
yeah.
And it was, I mean, his, Kevin Kataoka, I don't know if you know him. He's a comic.
I don't,
but
actually.
Of Japanese ancestry. His family has been in this country longer than mine. So, yeah, why would he have an accent?
Exactly.
He would have a California accent, like a person.
I like the accents that throw you off. Like, I've met a few Asians from Australia.
Oh, right.
And so they'll talk to me, and they'll have the thickest Australian accent. Now I just want to just hear them talk. Like, it's just so weird. And
speak to me, black person from Britain.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
You're just, which, of course, is just – I don't know. Is that institutionalized racism, or is that just being dumb? It's just not thinking it through, I guess. That's all it is.
I don't know. It's still jarring to me.
It's jarring, and you got to think it through. That's all.
Yeah, I imagine it will. And you mentioned you were not the hero of this fucking story, but
right.
That's... But the album, I am not the hero of this story. That's your
right.
new album.
That's the new album.
And,
new stories being created every day, where I'm not the hero.
if you're a part of them, or if you want to tell them, mm-hmm. we're all ears. And that's available everywhere: iTunes,
right.
Amazon, wherever
Amazon.
You can find.
Right, and you can listen to it for free on Spotify and Pandora and all that. And
oh, nice.
Yeah. And if you have international, for some reason, Amazon and iTunes, they're freaking out about downloading it if you want to download it internationally. So I have these download cards where you go to like dropcards.com/ the name of the thing. And so if you email me, it's just go to JackieCashin.com and just email me, and I'll just send you a picture of the back of that card, and you can PayPal me or not. It'd be nice if you would, but I'm not going to sweat it.
And that's Cashin is Kashian.
That's it.
Yeah, so JackieCashin.com. Yeah, so all of you international listeners.
Huge amounts of numbers of I actually sold a good half a dozen of them or so, and it's only been out for a couple of weeks. So it's good.
Because of the internet, the reach is insane. Just watching sometimes you get reports and you just see a picture of the map of the world.
Yeah.
And you just see little dots from where everywhere.
Just random dots where you're like, oh, okay, Iceland. Interesting.
You
good for you.
What's that dot doing over there? But yeah, we have international listeners, and you guys can get a album technically for free, but if you'd like to donate and help her out for the art, then please
do that. Sure.
PayPal and your podcast. You have two of them, podcasts.
Yeah, I do a lot of charity work.
Yeah. Okay, this is probably my favorite title ever. The Dork Forest.
Dork Forest. Dork is a nerd and geek. Dorks.
Dork is the best word for nerd. I'm over the word nerd. I think it's overused.
Nerd's hard.
But dork.
Dork's a good one. And it stems from, I used to do a joke. It's on three albums ago or two albums ago or something about the Dork Forest and how deep into the Dork Forest I'm willing to go to hang out with people and where I draw the line. And it was right before the war reenactment guys, because I met some World War II reenactment guys that were slightly made me uncomfortable.
Really?
Yes.
That's where you draw the line. What about the LARPers?
Oh, no. I know a lot of LARPers.
Yeah, me too.
LARPing's fine.
I've seen LARPing.
LARPing's good. I've done some LARPing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I mostly do craft services because my husband's a game designer. So he has done a lot of LARPs. He's an amazing – he did four or five of Sandman. You know, remember Neil Gaiman's Sandman? I don't know. He also – the most recent one that we had at the house was a 6 or 8 episode of the TV show Deadwood. So it's just cowboys. Cowboys and swearing. And – and then it was fun.
Yeah.
It's just a – LARPing is live action role playing, so it's a costume party with game mechanics. That's what I think of it as.
Yeah, I think I went to my first one, and I've only been an observer. It was
Which is
in Washington.
So hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, but it's just fun because everybody's so into it, and if you're watching people having that great of a time. Then it's going to be fun to watch. Too.
Immersive theater, you guys.
It really
That's
is.
That's what it is.
And they're all so into it, and they're all very open about it. Like if you want to ask them questions, or if you want them to take pictures with them, things like that. They're all about it. But I'm thinking from people who don't know either one, if they saw the war reenactment group versus the LARPers,
they would.
I feel like
the
LARPers would look dorkier because it's not only reenacting, but it's something that is a. Fake, like it's fantasy,
right, and right, because we're reenactment. You're like, oh, you're playing army, and with LARPing, like I've done a Star Trek-y kind of one called Starship Valkyrie, and where I played the medical officer, and
very important role, yeah,
right,
they
sure,
need
sure.
you,
yeah, they need me. What happens if there's trouble, and but there's like H.P. Lovecraft. LARPing. The greatest thing about LARPing is that it can be about anything. One of the ones that Andy did, my husband, that made me laugh, he did a Venture Brothers LARP where him and his buddy Scott played the two Monarch henchmen, 24 and 21, I think. And his buddy had never been in a LARP before, and he thought that you had to stay in character forever. And Andy said it was the funnest thing just watching his buddy Scott for 4 hours, just do the voice from the Venture Brothers. And he was like, I'm going to go get a soda or a beer. But you keep playing. And
sure.
Because you can – it's as immersive or not as you want it to be, you know. And if it's – like the Deadwood one, it got a little – one of the guys got a little too into it. And he was running a saloon in sort of our outside backyard area. And I was like, hey, you can't use the N-word in my neighborhood. Because it was him and his buddy they had a saloon and their characters were Union soldiers from the Civil War. And so for some reason, it was still okay to use the N-word. Yeah, and I was like, your saloon just got moved into the garage if you want to be that realistic.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
And then there was a whorehouse, and there was a little bit of smack talk on ladies that made someone uncomfortable. And Andy was like, okay, keep it together, people.
I just see a lot of just racist like, you know, they get in their secret meetings, like, guys, there's this thing called LARPing where we can just say the N-word and right. nobody will care. We got to right. get in on this.
Exactly. How do we get in on the weird, you know, sexist, racist? Yeah. You're like, we're not, They're it's totally not a cool Klan that. Meeting. Yeah. That's the only rule with the Dork Forest, by the way, is your dorkdom cannot be racism. It cannot be sure. something creepy
that's
or negative.
That's the only rule.
That's the only rule. Because, like, this week's episode is musicals. I don't know if you ever saw a show on Adult Swim called Steven Universe.
I don't.
Right, whatever. It's a cartoon. And the woman who created it is the guest. But what I do is I have people – it's sort of like this where you have people who have kind of entertainment jobs or other jobs, and then you ask them questions about old jobs that they've had. Mm-hmm. With the Dork Forest, like, I'll talk to – Beverly D'Angelo, or I'll talk to this woman, Rebecca Sugar, and her dorkdom is musicals. So we're talking about The Fiddler on the Roof and Guys and Dolls for an hour. So it's super fun, but yeah. it can be anything. Like, I just had Al Madrigal on, and his dorkdom was the Jack Reacher novels.
Oh.
The novels of Jack.
Sure.
sure. Which is essentially The Punisher, but not. I don't know. It's a little vigilante. You know, kind of. I don't know if you ever read any of the Jack Reacher novels.
I haven't. But see, it's the whole dork culture, mm-hmm. If you will. It's like I see a lot of people like I don't want to be like too stereotypical, but it is stereotypically like they like the same things. Like you want to go to a Magic the Gathering.
Oh right, and the Dork Forest can be all of those things. It can be board games and video games mm-hmm. and LARPing and comic books and movies and cartoons and stuff, but it can also be weird, like, what, I had Will Anderson, Australian comic. He talked about cricket, the game of cricket,
oh.
which I've never understood, and I understood it, how to play it, for a full hour after that episode, and now it's gone.
Yeah,
but
it doesn't retain.
Nah, it's all a blur. There's 600 episodes. So
600 episodes? Yeah. That's a lot of dork.
That's a lot of dorkdoms, man.
Yeah, dorkdoms.
A lot of people dorking out about whatever. So, like, last week, I don't know. Yeah, so it goes... Yeah, I think it's Al Madrigal's Jack Reacher novels, which isn't a traditional dorkdom, right?
Sure, and then I've never heard of it.
Right, with, you know, like Tom Cruise bought the rights to them, and he's the movie guy.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Tom Cruise was like 5'6" or 5'7", and the Jack Reacher dude is an old MP, like an Army MP. That's his character. He's retired, obviously, but he's 6'5", and the guy's a house.
Yeah.
And
so they always film Tom Cruise from a low angle. Because it makes him look tall. They really do. If you watch any of his movies, they film him lower, so on camera he looks taller.
Really? I always think it's more of a. I was wondering if all the sets were at like a forced perspective, like Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
75% is scale, making him look enormous.
Yeah. He eats with a shrimp fork on camera. Yeah.
His hands are enormous. He's Trump.
I love all of that, and I like hearing more of the technical stuff of side of things if I don't really know about it. Like I don't know if this was really dorked, but I really like guitar gear. I like.
Oh, that's pretty. I had Dave Hill on talking about guitars.
He's an incredible guitarist. He's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I had Fred Armisen on talking about, I think. It was either guitars or music.
He plays really good gear, too. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I'm a nerd.
But it's a total nerd dork kind of thing where you're just like, no, I like the thing you plug into the thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, do you? Please tell me more.
I enjoy the signal path. I want.
I don't even know what that is. You're totally welcome to be on the Dork Forest.
Oh, I'd love to.
Attainable goal.
So that's my thing. Like, I really enjoy the technical side of it. And then I had a guy in here once who's a luthier, and he's like, he repairs amps and things, and we just went
wow.
into it, and
yeah.
we got a really good response. And these are from people who have no idea even how to how many strings a guitar has, and they're
right.
and they're listening to all this. So I could see how that's a super fun show, and I'm totally in.
Yeah, yeah. It's great because it can be anything. You know, I had the first of my family members, my brother Phil, went down this Lord of the Rings rabbit hole.
Whew.
That was, I was like, all right. Go deep.
That's a big rabbit hole. I've the farthest I've gone is I've watched all three movies in a day.
Oh, in a day?
In a sitting.
Yeah.
Like, we just left it on, but like, it was me and a few friends. We were like, let's see if we can do this.
Here's what
we really
like
had
to
nothing to do.
Right. That's a lot of nothing. Yeah. I like to watch Willow over and over again.
Really?
I think of the Lord of the Rings is a bit of my dorkdom, so I love the books more than the movies.
Well, I think anybody who's read – I didn't read the books.
Right, so, right. Yeah, and the books are amazing. Books, and the movies, by the way, are excellent action movies. They're really great action movies, especially when I watch them because I own them. I have to forget that I read the books so that I don't freak out.
Yeah, they're two different entities. Like, yeah, you can't think of it.
It's fine. It's like a powdered mashed potato versus a homemade mashed potato. I like both of them. They're totally different foods.
Yeah, just don't make me compare them.
Yeah, don't. Good. I'm never comparing them.
We don't need that. And you also, for those who don't know, Jackie's a really, really funny comedian. The album I Am Not the Hero of This Story, but she's also the podcast host of The Dork Force and The Jackie and Lori Show, where she kind of combines her podcast hosting with her comedy because it's with Lori Kilmartin, who's hilarious.
Right, and we're just both the whole premise is – Kilmartin came up to me like a year ago, and Lori Kilmartin writes for Conan, and she does The Road, and she's a stand-up comic. She's a great comic.
She probably rose to fame from the tweeting about her dad dying, right?
Yeah.
Like live tweeting
her
dad's death.
The last 10 days of her father's life, she accidentally live tweeted it because it was her processing it, and because she's so freaking hilarious – it was mesmerizing, and she got like 20,000 followers in a week.
I'm totally fine with, like, if that's how people process with comedy. You know, I don't think that's weird. I don't think that's unusual. You know, I know a lot of people who do it.
Yeah.
You know, some, like, I hate to say it, but I mean, some of the, like, when I go to funerals or wakes, like, the stories people tell, they're hilarious.
Yes.
And
that's what you want.
Yeah.
Remember the person who died and make it funny.
It's joyous.
One of my favorite tweets of hers was her father, super conservative, and she leaned over in, like, his last hours, and she was just trying to get anything out of him, right? And she leaned over and whispered in his ear, "You're right, Dad, Obama's a Muslim." And he smiled, and she was like, "Yes, yes," because he believed all the weird conspiracy.
Just give it to him.
Yeah, just give it to him. And he knew she was kidding, right? And so she was like, he was still there, and it made her so happy. And so she has a special where she does 45 minutes. There are 45 jokes, it's called. 45 jokes about my dead dad, and it's on CISO, which is owned by NBC, so which is also connected somehow to Amazon Prime.
Uh-huh.
So if you have Amazon Prime, you can get it. Otherwise, CISO has a bunch of cool stuff.
I think this promo code still works. If you go to CISO and use the promo code podcast when you got like 30 days free or something. So, yeah, check it out.
You can also use Kilmartin, I think. So whatever you got to do.
Anything, yeah.
Yeah, just start typing words.
You'll hit something.
Helium.
I always do that with ESPN. Like, I think they probably advertise on ESPN.
Yeah,
I always enter ESPN as my promo code. If I can't think of one.
Right. And it sometimes works. Yeah, fair enough.
I like the idea of this show because this is just based off me reading about it. I actually haven't heard it yet, but you guys talk about the being female comics, as you both are.
Right, because she came up to me and she was like, you know that stupid question they ask us every time they interview us? What's it like? What's it like being a woman comic? Like, either of us.
I'm just going to cross out half my notes here.
Oh, shit. Well, you've been anything but a woman comic, right? And so they're like, is it sexist? And you're like, I don't know. Is it sexist being a woman plumber? Probably. There's sexism everywhere, and you deal with it in different ways. I mean, maybe that's what they're looking for. People are just kind of looking for, what's the awesome story where you shut a dude down because he was gross? And you're like, okay, I got six of those. That's fine. And then they all end with, and then he didn't kill me. So hooray. But every week we just talk about what it's like being comics. And it happens to have sort of, you know, what it's like being women comics because we're women. And so it comes up. And for months, it hasn't been for a couple of months, but for months, every week, there'd be some new horrible, like, nightmare where some dude comic tried to rape a waitress or some guy said something horrible in the green room or somebody, you know, there'd be like some huge reveal and we would have to – wow, did you hear about the latest thing that happened? So, like, we have this theme of, dudes, seriously, try not to be horrible. And if you make a joke and it's a nightmare, and you should be able to tell in the moment that you've made a joke is not received.
I hate that feeling.
And, but if you have, like, if you make some weird, cunty crack, I'm going to pet your pussy joke where you're just like, and those are dudes who have like no social skills and they've made it and they're like, maybe it'll be funny. And you're like, you should notice in the moment that it's not going well. Try to apologize in the moment, and you'll get rid of just like it. It'll diffuse it. It'll be great.
Yeah, you kind of erase it.
Yeah,
right?
Be an adult. You can handle it, man. It's not going to kill you. Just
humans are simple creatures. I mean, like there's that famous storytelling. Like when you're writing a script or something, it's called like petting the dog. Like you have this terrible villain. And the second this puppy walks up to him, and he goes and he just strokes it once or twice, and now we like the guy because he just pet the dog.
We made him human.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, just give yourself your own humanity back, but you have to be self-aware to do it. You have to go, oh, that joke actually made her want to cry. Probably wasn't funny. Sorry about that. And then maybe if you practice that long enough, you will stop being kind of a horrible dirtbag of a joke writer.
Yeah. Take note of what doesn't work and don't.
Right. You can do it, man. I just did a club in Peoria, and the bartender made the dumbest joke as I walked up to the waitress. Is he said something like, no, I don't know, maybe I'm going to. And he pulled his phone out while he did it, so it was a little threatening. And because he goes, well, I don't know, maybe I'm going to have to take a picture up your skirt.
What?
And you're like, what the fuck just happened? And so that's what I came in on. And so I looked at both of them and I was like, what the fuck just happened? Because I'm 100 and I've always been 100. Oh. And I'm just like, I'm willing to be the part of the village raising you. And so he goes, and the waitress turns to me and goes, right? That isn't okay, right? And I go, No, I'm sure there's some litigation that could happen. And then the bartender, he kind of backs up and he's like, oh, I did something wrong. And he goes, what if I said she was my sister? And I was like, well, that actually makes it worse. That's weirdo fucking Magoo.
That was the exact opposite way you should have been running.
I was like, and the thing about the guy, so I'm telling, you know, the story to my, I told it to my husband, I told it to Lori Kilmartin on the pod, and in the story, I always started out with, bartender, nice guy. And which means,
clarify.
Right. And
set the stage.
And everybody I've told the story to is like, yeah, that doesn't sound like a nice guy, Jackie. That sounds like a creep. And I was like, yeah, but he was okay. He was a nice enough guy.
Yeah, before that, like, you know, the small talk.
And probably
was fun,
afterwards, like perfectly, you know, I'm sure if he pet a dog, we would all like him.
Yeah. And, just give him a puppy. Yeah, everybody just have your metaphorical puppy, like, in case of things happen.
Bring
like that.
A puppy with you everywhere if you're going to be weird.
You pet that thing after.
Exactly. Look, a dog likes me.
That's all you need. I do want to check out that show, and I love stories like that from the road or just like things like that. And comics, I mean, just endless stories.
Right, and there's a million middle-aged white dude comic podcasts, and so there just aren't any middle-aged white lady podcasts.
Lady dudes, yeah.
Lady dudes talking about stand-up. So we have sort of it's not exactly a step forward. It's a lateral move in the world of justice. Mm. But okay, it's
how still
fast
on the road?
How often?
Yeah.
Yeah, like 30 weeks a year.
30 weeks?
Yeah, it's a lot of road. But that's what I make my living, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love it so it's all good.
Yeah, and you got an album to promote, too? You got...
Yep, I got I'm Not the Hero of the Story, which was great. It first time ever, because I have, this is my fourth album, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time it made it to number one on all the charts, on Amazon and iTunes, anyway.
Woo!
And then it made it to 3 on Billboard. Without, by the way, a bullet. It did not go any further than that, but it never made Billboard ever.
Yeah, if
so
you cracked
I was
the Billboard
like,
charts. I mean, you could.
That's a win.
Let's all nominate Jackie for a Grammy because I think you're eligible now.
That'd be awesome. I would lose my mind if I got nominated. I don't even know what I would do.
They get Grammys for that.
Yeah,
stuff. You're already charting, so I think you're eligible, right?
I think so. I think if you get in the top 5, maybe you're eligible or whatever.
I don't know the exact specs, but.
Someone
we'll
does. Someone
there.
Listening does.
It's out there. Yeah. Any of you guys, if you can nominate her for a Grammy and then send me something for doing that too.
Right. Just a dollar.
Yeah. You guys getting free stuff? I want in.
Right.
So you're out. I know I read that you perform for the troops.
Yeah.
You go overseas.
Yeah.
How do those shows differ from the regular touring?
They're kind of hilarious just because they're like doing really small towns in Australia or North Dakota, where people are like, thank God you've come. You don't even have to be funny. You're just like, just say anything that isn't about this guy's wife. I've been listening to his stories for 14 months. Any story that isn't about his buddy or his mom or his sister or his wife or his kids, that'd be fantastic. They're just bored. And because I guess a lot of war is sitting around, turns out. There's a lot of sitting around going on.
Oh, yeah.
Being nervous.
I've seen Jarhead.
You've seen Jarhead. You know things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much an expert.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You just rent that Generation Kill thing, and then you're in. It's a HBO special. Anyway, so show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was educational for me, though, because I had never my dad was in the Marines, but he wasn't good at it by his own account. He was like, oh, I was a terrible Marine. He goes, first of all, I was in the Navy. And he was a medic. And so the Marines don't have their own medics. They get them from the Navy. And my dad, he was in the Navy and then lent to the Marines in between Korea and Vietnam. So literally, he said he spent 6 years delivering people's babies and dealing with car accidents. So I was like, oh, did you ever deliver any of us? I'm the youngest of six.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, no, I wouldn't want to create the illusion that I'd be there for you. And it's like, thank you. Thank you for that. But so I don't know. I never knew anything about the service. You know, like most of my brothers have some sort of physical. Like my oldest brother had a bad hip. Like his one leg was shorter than the other. And so he wasn't eligible for the draft. And then my second oldest brother is deaf in one ear. And my third oldest brother has epilepsy. And my fourth oldest brother wanted to go to college. And my sister was like, she's gay. And she joined the Army. And then in like 81, I think. It was 1981. And they – yes, I'm 100. So – but she joined the Army to be in the band. Like my family wants to go into the service for weird reasons. And we would all have weird jobs. I mean, we would never be like – we're not exactly – you know, I'm not La Femme Nikita over here. It would be if I were in the service. But what I did find out when I went over to the troops is that like 98% or more of the people that I met literally wanted to be of service. That's why they joined the service. I mean, some people did it to get out of town or
sure.
get out of their neighborhoods and
they
stuff.
Didn't know anything
a
better.
Job.
Yeah,
you know, I was like, I got to get out of here. Oh, there's three hots and a cot. I'm out.
Yeah.
And that's great. But once they're in, they genuinely want to be of some use, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, you would meet like the second tour I did with this incredibly beautiful comic who's really funny and really smart, but does, you know, some dirty jokes and she's super good looking. And so she was like a magnet to like weirdo dudes in the service that other guys were like, nah, Jimmy's okay. You don't want to leave her alone with him.
And I love that. And, guys totally do that.
Yeah, like, guys are like, nah, Jimmy's so all right in a fight. But what I'm saying is, and because Jimmy would be the kind of guy who'd be like, nah, you're not safe unless you're with me. You want to feel my muscle? And you're like, dude, you're exhausting. And so.
It's a good move, though.
Yeah, it was a pretty good move. Pretty good move occasionally. I don't think it worked with her.
No.
On the
Yeah,
but,
yeah, Jimmy, that's just. That's classic Jimmy, though.
That's classic Jimmy. What are you going to do? And so, like, the first time I've only done two kind of – well, only one. I've done several, but, like, we went to Iraq, and that was the only wartime one that we did where we drove around to forward operating bases and stuff. And that was terrifying.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, because I lived – all the stories where I lived, I'm like gratified to have been part of the solution. And then the next one, we were supposed to go to Afghanistan, but they killed bin Laden literally the week before we were supposed to go. And they're like, no, you're still going, but we don't know where. And I was like, well, what if I don't want to go now because I'm scared? And they said, no, you're still going.
It's a little touchy times
right
now.
Yeah. And I was like, what if I don't want to go? And they're like, no, you're still going. And I was like, did I enlist at some point? What's happening? But then we ended up going to like Africa and Saudi Arabia and Oman and Kuwait and just wandering around. And we didn't – that one was all women. We had a guy, but the guy got hurt second day. And if you go to the Middle East – I recommend bringing a dude. You need a dude. Someone to clear brush in front of you with his dick because nobody's listening to you if you were just ladies padding around. It was okay.
But
in the end, it worked just fine.
Yeah. And it just seems every comic that I've known who's done it, just they love doing it. And it's just such an enthusiastic crowd.
The crowd's amazing. I mean, even we went to Puerto Rico to do, I think it was Coast Guard. Well, no, we did a Navy base and we did a Coast Guard base. And those guys were like, yes, thank God you've come. I've been up and done Air Force bases in Alaska. You know, I've been out in the middle of the desert here in California doing a couple of them. They're just, you know, they're just bored. And you know, the work isn't – it's not like they're making a fortune doing this gig. Yeah. So we can all be part of the, hey – da, 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 da.
Yeah, let's cheer you guys up. I mean, mood and morale is huge. You got to help them out with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I mean, Jackie, the show is called Resume. We should talk about some of your old jobs.
Let's do it. Let's talk about some old jobs.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. No,
exactly. TikTok.
No. Let's talk about it, because I mean, let's see. You're from Wisconsin,
right? And I was raised by salespeople, so every job I ever had until probably. Yeah, middle 90s was a sales job. I created my first job when I was 11. I think I must have been 11. There was a thing in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the little factory town I'm from outside of Milwaukee, in between Milwaukee and Racine. And there was a pizza place called Freshies Pizza. And it was, we make them, you bake them. And I was like, hey, I'll flyer for you guys for money. And they're like, well, no.
Yeah,
but how about this? You go door to door, ask people if they want to buy a pizza, and then you call from their house, order the pizza, and then come back and pick up the pizza and then deliver it to them, and we'll give you 50 cents a pizza. And I was like, wow, sure.
What?
Right. I was 11, and I didn't have a bike. And my town is probably 3 square miles, right? It's just it's a small town, but it's – so it became more – if, this is the first job I got fired from. It became more efficient because Freshies had a deal. If you bought 3, you got 1 free. They're big fans of rhyming. And so what I would do is the first pizza I would sell, I would order 3 of them and get 4 of them. Come back, give the people the pizza they deserved, right, because that they had ordered, and then sell the other 3 pizzas just door to door.
Really?
And then I would make.
You're 11?
Yeah. Oh. Then I would make $35 that I would then have to. And then I would get. It was great.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, I'd make like $12. There would be like 1 free pizza in that thing. Yeah. So then I would get 50 cents a pizza. So I'd get $1.50 plus the 11.
The idea of an 11-year-old girl just knocking on my door saying, hey, you want a pizza?
Hey, people. Sure. It's essentially.
Can I use your phone?
It was, well, and that's how it happened. It worked for like a week, and I made probably $40 or $50 doing it. And then somebody narked on me back to Freshies, and then Freshies fired me.
It's like, wait. Freshies, I want 1 pepperoni, 1 sausage, 1 mushroom. And 1 meat lovers. You have to hide that 4th one.
Well, and the weird thing is they were. Like, I'm sure somebody called and said, hey, there's a little girl going door to door, says that people are ordering pizzas and then not being there. So we just bought a pizza from her. And I'm sure Freshies was like, oh, I see what she's doing. And then I was fired. So, but, and then I also had like this thing where, you know, you sold candy bars for Little League or student council. And there were 2 rules when I was – must have been 14 or 15. You could only sell the candy bars for student council on campus, and they were 50 cents each. And I sold them for $1 each in front of Kmart and Kohl's in my town, and then at every bar in between them. I was 15. I just go into the bar. And factory workers, right? What you know, 25-year-old factory worker doesn't want to – and I'd be like, hey, guys, I got student council candy bars. They're $1 a piece. And factory workers are like, hey, I get to talk to a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And here's $1. And I made like $70 a week for months. And I blew it all on Donkey Kong, by the way, and Tempest.
Straight
to the arcade. Just blew it like crazy. I was spending so much money on video games in 1980. And And eventually I got caught by pride was my downfall. I bragged about it to Holly Habonic, a girl in my class whose name will live in infamy. And she narked on me to the principal who called me in. And the principal was like, hey, I hear you're selling student council candy bars off campus for double what they're supposed to be sold. And I thought the off-campus thing was a problem. I never thought the double was a problem because I had told my dad. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, nice work. So I said, yeah. Well, everybody else was selling them on campus, so I couldn't get any traction, you know? And he says, you have a double? And I said, yeah. And he goes, you can't sell them for double. And I said, I literally repeated what my father had told me, which was, what do you care? You're getting your cut. At which point I was suspended. And I was walking home from school sobbing.
I need to wet my beak a little too.
Exactly. You're getting your 50 cents a pop. What do you care? And so I'm walking home from school just confused as all hell. I'm like, what the hell? I got in trouble for making a profit? This has never happened in the world of Cations, right? I get home. My dad's sitting there with my sister. And I'm like, they both have this super stern look on their face. They're sitting on the couch. I totally remember this. And they have this stern. And I was like, hey, I got – and they burst out laughing. And my dad stands up, hits me on the back and goes, dinner's on you tonight, kid. What? And that was the entire – that's all I was – that's
– I love that. To be honest, I thought you should have gotten rewarded for finding out that, hey, we can sell these candy bars and people will buy them for this price.
Yeah. How about you charge $1 a piece? It'll be fine. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you opened up a whole new door for them. Like you,
exactly.
Like you were a test. You were testing.
Dr. Klein was not interested. My principal, Klein, was not interested in this sort of. And then,
yeah,
the worst job I ever had was Kinko's.
Kinko's,
which is FedEx Kinko's now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I've spent a lot of time at Kinko's.
Here's the joke. I used to talk about, because when I went to Iraq, I did not know that the Army was a job. And it is a job, and it reminded me of Kinko's because it's quiet, it's tense, and everyone is standing around thinking to themselves, am I going to kill someone or is someone going to kill me? Which is exactly what Kinko's is.
That is the exact vibe I got when walking into Kinko's.
It's weird. I think it's because there's no music playing. It's just the whirring of the machines.
Fluorescent lighting.
Just people making $7 an hour. And
I always went early morning, so just everybody just
exhausted
like half asleep.
At the 24-hour shift.
They don't want to be there.
Oh, man. It was the dumbest job. It might possibly be the worst job I ever had in my life. And yeah, I did work at a hot dog stand, the best job I ever had. I've often thought about giving up and just going back. I worked in Provincetown, Massachusetts, which is like a gay resort. And I'm not gay. If I would have been, that's where I would have found out.
Provincetown.
That P-Town on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. One of my friends, her parents owned a house in Truro, the next town over. And so we all bought a car in college for $50.
Ooh.
And it made it to Provincetown. And
that's
then
a lot
the
of candy
axle.
Bars.
Yeah. Axle broke.
Oh.
And but didn't matter because we were all stacked like cordwood in like a one-bedroom apartment anyway. So it was this crazy – I had this job at this hot dog stand, foot-long hot dog stand, where I'd been doing stand-up for about 5 years at that point. And so and it was a windowed hot dog stand, right? So people would come up to the window and I totally just – did jokes and took orders.
Worked out your material.
Worked out my material.
Because
I was up high. And and it was like this gay resort. And there'd be super drunk gay dudes. And you know what what joke never got old? Put a condiment on that with a hot dog. Huh? Come on. Oof. Anyway, so. But here was the great thing about the job is you could start drinking at noon. And it was attached to a bar. And the drinks were free. And so I would work from 9 to noon and then noon to like 9, just hammered. And you couldn't drink. The first summer I only worked the window. You couldn't drink if you worked the window. You had to be a cook.
Oh, nice.
And so I started grill cook, fryolators.
Worked your way up to cook?
Worked my way up to full-on alcoholic. I was like, hey, I'm going to need just – and it was just vodka – it was just vodka with a splash of orange juice forever. And I just got hammered. And the first summer, actually, yeah, I worked at the hot dog stand. And then I had just graduated from college, so it was 88. And then 6-year plan. Anyway, so five-year plan, whatever. But and Labor Day, everybody went away. Everyone went back to college, right? And so and it went down. But I was going to Europe. And I was saving up to go to Europe. So I was going to stay for another month and a half. And so the hot dog stand guy who owned the hot dog stand was like, oh, I have a pizza place in Truro. So what you'll do is you'll work the hot dog stand, for the whale watch in the morning from like 9 a.m. until like 2. And then I'll drive you out to Truro and you'll work at my pizza place from like 3 to 11.
Like close. Yeah.
Yeah. And then one of the cooks lives back here and he'll drive you back. And I was like, okay.
That's a long day though.
For months. And it was just, yeah. And so nobody cared if I drank, and the guy who owned the place hammered all the time, just drinking a beer in the morning. And so I would start at noon, start drinking. So by 2, I was pretty well buzzed. And then we'd get into his like 72 VW Bug and drive the 5 miles to Truro, him hammered. But in that, he would sober up just enough that when we walk into the pizza place and he would have a Manhattan so that he could get his buzz back. And so then I started having a Manhattan.
Sure.
And then I made pizzas. I was a pizza maker for the rest of that summer. And then I went to Europe and had the three of the dumbest months where I worked in – I lived at a youth hostel in London.
You went to Europe to live there, not even just – it wasn't
yeah,
just like a –
yeah, it was like – and I had a work visa from college. So I could have had any job, Chris, any job. What did I decide to do with this – with my college degree and the bounty that was?
Oh, the possibilities are endless.
I worked at the youth hostel working breakfast from 6 a.m. to 9 and then from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. This is for 3 months. I didn't even see London. I barely saw London because from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. I worked at a movie theater in Leicester Square where I saw the movie High Spirits 26 times. High Spirits, Liam Neeson, Daryl Hannah. Liam Neeson was just – he was the best part of the movie. It was the worst movie ever. It was Steve Guttenberg, Peter O'Toole, and Daryl Hannah.
What a cast,
and
though.
Morgan Fairchild.
Sure.
And there were ghosts, and Liam Neeson played a ghost, and he was the only good thing about the movie. Anyway, 26 times. And
Was it as busy as it is now? I've been to Leicester Square, and it's
yeah,
crazy.
It was crawling. Yeah. One of the coolest things that happened in that one is that was the year that – so I don't know what year it was, but it was the year that Roger Rabbit came out. And Prince Charles and Princess Diana were in Leicester Square, and I got to see them.
Ooh.
From across the square. I didn't, you know, we didn't hang out or anything.
So, yeah, but I mean, you guys
it was still cool to see
you
them.
You guys are pretty much like cool friends now.
Yeah, yeah. We're friends.
That counts.
Sure. She comes. She haunts me. No, she doesn't haunt me.
Oh, God.
And there was a comedy club in Leicester Square that I did twice. It was called the Comedy Store or the Comedy Cellar. It was mm-hmm. like a regular comedy name, right? And I did it twice, and I did it in my uniform because they were like, you could have a set at 1 a.m. on a Wednesday. And so I went, and I was wearing – like I had to wear this weird gray skirt and a candy-striped shirt and a giant bow. So I took the bow off.
Yeah, because that'd look weird.
Yeah, that'd look weird. Who doesn't want to see a weird lady do stand-up in a gray polyester skirt and candy-striped shirt? A blouse, by the way. Not a shirt, a blouse. And I ate it so hard the first time that I got off stage. Actually, not even from the stage, I said, I'm doing this show again next week because you people fucking suck. And I did it again the following week. And
good.
It was much better.
Hey, yeah. I like that. I like yeah. anybody who does that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you know Jim Jefferies at that time? I know he got a lot of experience.
You know, I've only met him once.
Mm.
And I think he's probably 10, 15 years younger than me, isn't he? Isn't he like 45?
Yeah, he's around there, yeah.
I'm 50, which nobody needs to know because now no one wants to book me. But there's nothing to be done. I'm going to continue to be 50, so we're all fucked. And I can't fix it. I can't fix it. I can't turn into a 27-year-old who weighs 12 pounds. I'm
so sorry. Somebody would have told me this earlier.
Exactly. Get out.
No, I like that you go back. Like I think it was Seinfeld who compared comedians to like skateboarders. You just watch all the skateboarders just throwing themselves downstairs and operators just falling and eating it and just getting back up and trying it again just to land it and
indeed.
Stick it. And
I admire
anybody who does that. You know,
I admire Seinfeld for continuing to do stand-up. It's the kind of thing where there's comics who have a giant bag of money, right? And you're like, you don't have to do stand-up anymore. But
he
does.
He has a bag of bags of money.
Yeah, just like he's got a fort made of Scrooge McDuck money.
Yeah.
And he does stand-up because he has to do stand-up. You know, it's like Chris Rock.
It's
like,
part of him, yeah.
Yeah, Chappelle. And even Bill Cosby. I worry about Bill Cosby because I wonder about Bill Cosby.
He just needs to pet a dog.
Okay. That guy pets a dog. We're all going to be a little suspicious. And but I'll say this because you know that he's not – I say this all the time too because I obsess about Bill Cosby. He probably hasn't done stand-up in like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. But you know he's still writing.
He's itching.
He's just – but he can't get up anywhere because the fuck puts Bill Cosby on stage?
He's going to have to get like an anonymous pen name kind
right.
of thing.
And right, right. And it's just – I wonder if he's writing a book. Oh, I want to read that book.
Oh, that'd be a great book.
Oh, my God. Just him. Just crazy. Because I assume – because, you know, you think about like over 50 women said that he raped them, right?
Sure.
And from what I've read some of the interviews with women who were like – and the weird thing is if he would have just asked, we could have had sex. We would have done it, you know? And but the thing is he's a rapist, so they had to be knocked out.
Yeah.
That's the whole creepy part of the dude.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, and then I extrapolate even further. I got a lot of solo time, Chris. So I was thinking, well, maybe it doesn't feel like he's cheating if he's having sex with an unconscious woman. Like, because he's a big family guy, right?
Sure.
Like, he's supposedly a family value dude. So
he was a symbol of, like, a family value.
Right, right. Yeah. So maybe he's not really cheating on his wife if they're out of it, right? Maybe it's not – you're like, oh, that's even weird. Get some help, man. And
yeah.
I just want everyone to get some help, I guess, is my point.
I don't have
to be horrible. Please.
You don't.
No.
Yeah,
no, keep plugging.
Bartender, Bill Cosby.
Yeah,
not putting you in the same boat, but I mean, if you guys want to jump in the same Uber to the help desk, you guys go.
Please talk to somebody. It's like it's when somebody because most of my jokes are pretty much like I don't bitch about my husband or you know he's a good guy. There's no you know, mm-hmm. And someone was asking me, they were like, how come you don't you know what do you think about negative comedy? And I was like, well, I've heard negative comedy. That's hilarious. I don't if you can do it funny, do it.
Yeah.
For me, it's more work. To live some sort of weird negative life, write those jokes, and then relive that negative life on stage every night, I'd rather try to be happy and do the hard work of writing jokes about being happy. It's a harder thing,
mm-hmm.
But I get to be happy in like twice, right? Where I'm happy initially and I'm happy when I'm telling the joke.
Yeah, it's so much more rewarding for you.
It's so much more. I'm like, some people are like, it's a lot harder. And I'm like, I don't know. Seems like the same amount of work, and I get to be happy. So who cares?
Yeah, it's a good route.
Yeah, I'd rather do that.
I back that. I mean, that's just the beauty of comedy. There's funny in everything.
Yeah,
so
exactly. Do whatever comedy you want to do.
Yeah, I don't care. If you guys make me laugh, I don't care. Negative, positive, whatever.
Right, and if I don't like it, turns out, I walk away.
Yeah.
So.
And you just come back the next day and try again.
It's yeah, there's going to be a different comic next week, you guys. And YouTube, Google the comic you're going to see. It will help.
Really?
Yeah, because everyone just shows up. Would you ever go see a band not knowing what kind of band it was?
I've done it a few times.
How is it?
It's all right.
Exactly,
I mean,
right?
Some bands have really blown me away because I like – there's a part of me that likes going in not knowing anything. It's like same with movies. Like I like just getting the raw experience. But you know, at the same time –
what if it's ska and you really like death metal, right?
Yeah.
I mean you're just like just check. You don't have to, you know, if you hear a joke that they tell a joke that we've already heard, it's a bit of a drag, but you know what kind of jokes they tell. You watch a 5-minute Conan set, that's not going to ruin a 45-minute set.
What do you put on YouTube? How do you choose what clips go up? Because, I mean, I know a lot of comedians are very sensitive to what they put out there and things like that.
Yeah, I don't really put – there's a podcast called Put Your Hands Together. Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher have this podcast where you do a set. And then at the end of the set, you tell them if you're willing to let them air it. Yeah, she's like, if you didn't like that set, if those are new jokes that you needed to work on, because it's always sold out at UCB, right, Franklin. So it's a great audience.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love going to shows there.
Yeah, and so you're like, no, I'm actually that joke isn't done. I just needed to work on it in front of a great audience. Don't air that as a set. Or like I did a bunch of weird jokes. That I don't think are going anywhere. But I needed to do them. And I was like, you could air that. I don't know what I'm going to do with that material. Or if it doesn't go well, I'm like, don't air that. And they don't care. They might do an interview, like a short interview, like a 5-minute, instead of airing your 5-minute set. So that's the only kind of sets that really – like the Two Dope Queens. Mm-hmm. There was a set that I did on their show that I was like, yeah, go for it. But I don't do – I don't really put sets of myself up on YouTube. I have a YouTube – I do all the podcasts, that I, the two podcasts I do a week. There's so much content.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody. You're good. You are fine. Just go listen to my albums or yeah, come and see me live.
I think if you – yeah, if you, if people can listen to your podcast, they'll get a sense of you. And like they can go to your shows and know what you're about rather than hearing like, you know,
yeah, material. And the Jackie and Laurie show is entirely about stand-up. So there's a lot of riffing and a lot of just, oh, I think I'll be working on a bit regarding that topic. So who knows?
Yeah. So you just released this album, so are you at work for your next?
Yeah. Now I'm just trying to write new material. I was just telling somebody today that this album has been so well received that it's actually bumped me up kind of a notch. There was someone in the audience. Okay, it's a quality problem. I don't mean to bitch about it. It's a good thing, right?
I love good problems.
Yeah, it's a so the. This woman in the front row in the show that I just did a couple weeks ago kept leaning over and talking to her boyfriend in the front row during my set. And finally I was like, dude, you can't talk during my show. I'm right here. I can totally hear you and
it's
see
so
you.
So distracting.
It's super like, distracting. Yeah. And she goes, oh, I was just telling him that I heard this joke before and it's really funny. And I'm like, oh, you're killing me. You're killing me, kid. And because it's.
Well, then enunciate.
right. So she was like, no, I have all your albums and I have the new one. And I listen to them all the time. And I was like, oh, could you have sat in the last row? Because I don't have a new 45 yet, right? Because it just came out a month ago. I just recorded it 3 months ago. I probably have a new 10, 15 minutes because my albums come out every 2.5 years. Yeah. Like I'm prolific, but I'm not crazy prolific, right? Like I don't write like some comics write like a new hour every year. That is not me. Maybe I write a new hour, but what I've really written there is a really great 20 because it needs to be – because I write – all my jokes start out like 6 minutes long and they end up being about two and a half. Mm-hmm. So
– yeah, just cut it down.
Yeah, I got to cut it down. You got to find the – yeah, yeah, potent.
Yeah. Does that one person like knowing that – like out of the whole audience –
Kills me.
Do you change your set because of it? Do you change
yes. Yes, I did. It isn't okay.
No.
Because I wanted her to leave. I wanted her to just sit somewhere where she wasn't just benignly, happily smiling at me, happy to hear the old jokes.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I mean, for instance, for me, whenever I go to shows that I know that – if I know the jokes, I've seen this comic recently. Mm-hmm. For I personally, it feels – like it's now an inside joke. And
yeah.
I'm just really excited to watch everybody laugh at this joke the way that I enjoyed it when I first heard it.
I got this tantric sex joke that has a really crazy twist at the end of it. But if you hear it – oh, hello, tantric twist. I never even realized.
Like,
anyway,
yeah.
I get it. But if you've heard the joke once, the joke is – I mean it's not ruined, but all you can do is look around at other people and wait for them to get it. Because the twist is great. It's a great – I'm pretty happy with that joke, you guys. Pretty proud of my own joke.
Yeah, good.
Anyway, so – but it is the kind of joke that if once you hear it, you can't – it's not – it. The replay value of a good story joke is sort of greater than that joke. That joke, the tantric sex joke, you have to listen – you have to watch other people. That's where the fun is the second or 50th time you've heard it.
Yeah, I do enjoy doing that, but
– and you're good with that? That's awesome.
I do in my head I get in my own head too, and like for instance, a couple weeks ago, I played this like I play guitar and I sing,
right?
And I played this party where I had to do it for a couple hours, so, you know, covers, originals, whatever. Just I was wallpaper music.
As people
enjoyed the party. I'll be out playing some songs during it, and before I go on, this guy comes up and he's like, "Oh, I play guitar and stuff. Like, you pretty good? Like, what's going on? Like, what do you got? Like, you know."
And it's now, just a mind fuck.
And now he's in my head.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing. I started off I have the set list written down.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's molded to the part, like how the part is going to go. I play like the, you know, the more fun songs a little later and everyone has a few in them because, you know, everyone could sing along and have fun. And then I'm not, you know, I try to come out swinging a little bit and then, you know, some originals and things like that. But after about my third song, this guy comes up and he just stands right in front of me just to watch me. And now I'm freaking out. I panic and I just give him all the gold. I give it all out. And now I have an hour and a half left of like of like C's, like C yeah. pluses, like oh god, this
damn it.
Why did I do that?
I know, but it's just a sign that you're human. Turns out, your humanity came through.
I panicked. Yep. Panic, Jackie.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's all part of it. So, Jackie, you are very funny, and
thank you.
I'm so stoked. And I know you probably have a lot of other jobs that we didn't get to, but you know we'll have you back again.
It's fine. I quit my last day job 2003. Kept it far too long. I got my half hour special in 2003 from Comedy Central.
And that's when you quit?
That's how you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was like, you got to believe in yourself. Get out, because I loved a steady paycheck. You know.
Okay, we got to talk about this real quick if you have time, because I am curious. So what was the job?
It was a closed captioning company that I worked here in Los Angeles, and I didn't do closed captioning because those people, they have to you it's more of a commitment job. So I was essentially a monkey, and I logged things in. I would old school tapes, I would digitize them so that they could then be captioned, and I would answer the phones, and I would do jack of all trades kind of thing, right?
Okay.
And it was a great gig. The thing about that job is my boss was like, you could take she said you can go on the road, you can take either 2 6-week runs and we'll hire a temp, because I was replaceable, right?
Yeah.
And or 1 10-week run. And she said, and I'll still give you 2 weeks vacation and insurance, but we'll just hire a temp for those things.
That's so cool.
And I was like, you're amazing. And so that's why it was so hard for me to quit. And so I go in, and she was awesome, because I go, you know, I got this chunk of change from Comedy Central. I'm going to quit. I'm going to just try to, you know, do this for a living, like a real, you know, I've been working the road at, you know, when I lived in Minneapolis, I did like 20, 25 weeks a year and had a day job. But in LA, I could only do 12 weeks a year. And that was fine, because I was trying to get everyone to know who the hell I was.
Yeah.
So it was fine. But I said, hey, so I got to quit. And she actually said to me, are we not being flexible enough? And I was like, the only way you could be more flexible is if I'd stopped coming entirely and you still direct deposited my check. And she was like, oh, we're not doing that.
Sure.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah. But it was but I know like Kyle Kinane and Matt Bronger were both captioners. They did closed captioning. Yeah.
Wow.
They were both captioners with clearly better grammar skills than me and willing to stick around more. So –
Also, all of you talent agents out there looking for funny people.
Go talk to Vitech, you guys. Go talk to closed captioning services.
That's great that you found a job that kind of, you know, you could cater to both. Because, like, comedy is just such a so demanding. Like,
yeah.
Like, the times you have to go out, the times you need to be there.
Yeah, and it's draining. Like, if you have I knew comics who would have sales jobs, and I never wanted a sales job after, like, in 95. I was like, I got to save all my creative energy for stand-up. Mm-hmm. Sales jobs, you can make a good living, especially a comic, you know, because you have timing and you have, you know how to make people laugh. So, but it kind of bleeds off all that energy. It's sort of
That's draining, same
with you know, when I moved here, they offered me a job doing warm-up. And that's all of your creative energy too, and all of your goodwill, because you're trying to be patient while you wrangle toddlers, right? And because they're bored, and the pay is pretty good, but I've always, I guess, been willing to be slightly more broke and save all the best jokes for myself, which is
good.
Yep, good for me.
Yeah,
self-absorbed.
Good. Yeah, be self-absorbed.
Yep, it's my art, man.
Yeah,
it's mine.
Well, how was it? Like, were you excited to quit the captioning job?
Yeah, it was terrifying, quite honestly, because those first months and until about, you know, that was in 2003 that I quit. I got married in 2006, which was a nice buffer, because my husband has a real job. And so he was supportive and
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. But, you know, 3 years ago he said to me, I don't want to make video games anymore. I want to make board games. And we stared at each other in horror. And he goes, yeah, the lucrative world of board games.
Yeah.
And I was like, do whatever you want, man. You supported me for these like 8 years of – and I was like, you got 8 years of credit at least, you know. And I'm doing pretty good. So – and he still makes video games. I mean, he still has essentially – the greatest day job in the world, while he also wants to make time travel and like the Hero Instant is this RPG tabletop game. There's no money in it, but it's like D&D but superheroes. And so it's just on the web for free under the heroinstant.com if anyone wants to go. And it's literally you make a character. I made Firebike Mike, you guys, where I rode a motorcycle. I had fire powers and it was really cool. And you can make any power. You have all the powers. And so that's what he wants to do. And I'm like, do it. We live pretty frugally. We live in the valley.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. We're not, I just want to do stand up and he just wants to make games.
Yeah, and that's what you should be doing.
So, and that's all we're doing. And
good.
We're having the time of our lives. So, and if we have to have day jobs to do it, we're cool with that too.
All right.
But well, I haven't had one in a while. So
no.
And, knock on wood.
Yeah, and everybody, please get her new album, I Am Not the Hero of This Story. That's Jackie Kashian.
Nice.
Kashian. No ethnic.
It's Armenian. We can ethnic it up.
But
you don't have to. You don't have to.
And definitely check out her podcast, The Dork Forest and The Jackie and Lori Show. That one's on Nerdist. And tweet her. Reach out to her, at Jackie Kashian. Just her name.
Yep.
Easy.
On all the things, Instagram, Snapchat, the whole shebang.
All the social media platforms.
There it is.
Tell her how much you liked her on resume and please, but the album. Get it.
Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, thanks for coming. Come back anytime. And, yeah, that's pretty – oh, JackieKashian.com for tour dates and
sure.
Things like that.
Yeah, all that. It's a – you can also go to FamilyPetAncestry.com, which sends you to JackieKashian.com because
it
made
it really?
Me laugh. Made me laugh.
No.
I used to do a joke about how people are going to want to – Family Pet Ancestry, they're going to pay to find out if they're, like, their cat came over on the Mayflower or if their dog's eligible to join the DAR. Dogs of the American Revolution. Anyway, joke, family. But I kept it anyway long after I stopped doing the joke because it makes me laugh.
You know, the way the world's going, you might be able to sell that for a lot of money in the
exactly.
future.
Exactly.
All right. So, Jackie Kashian, thank you so much for coming. Once again, this is Resume. My name is Chris Loxamana. A reminder, the music you're listening to right now is available on Amazon, Google Play, iTunes. Just search Resume Podcast Theme. Help support the show. If you are looking to buy anything on Amazon, say, I Am Not the Hero of the Story. Click through the banner at chrisloxamana.com. It does not cost you anything to buy anything you want on Amazon, but it does. We do get a little kickback here at the show, and it does help. So please click through the banner at chrisloxamana.com. And that is it. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Jackie, for coming in. And till next time, we'll let you know.
Ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.